today we have, the next 2 days actually, we have awesome content planned for you. So I hope you guys will enjoy it. So please settle down as we begin this journey. Thank you very much.
Microsoft's mission is to empower every person, every organization, anywhere on the planet to achieve more. And Africa is the youngest billionaire.
What I like to say and what we always say is that Africa isn't rising, Africa has risen. It is the mobile first, cloud first continent.
We have a great opportunity for leapfrogging decades of technologies and closing the gap with the cutting edge technologies around the world. There are extraordinary Africans that are making things happen already.
They have a huge role to play here. They are going to be co-creators of solutions because they are the ones who are deeply invested in this amazing place.
The biggest thing we can expect from Nesta Africa is the spirit that fantastic things are going to come about in Africa.
My name is Nini, and I hope you have a life-changing experience at Next Tech Africa.
My name is Duni, and I hope you have an inspiring time at Next Tech Africa.
My name is Tammy, and I hope you have an innately African experience in Next Tech Africa.
My name is Donna Sarkar. Welcome to Next Tech Africa.
Ladies and gentlemen, please, a round of applause for Kunle Awosika, GM, Microsoft Kenya.
Good morning. Am I on? Am I off? I'm not sure. Okay, I think I'm on. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Africa. Good morning, Kenya. How y'all doing? Wonderful. I can see some very familiar faces in the room. Lots of our customers, our partners, a number of us from all parts of Africa. My Nigerian brothers, where are they? I can see you, Ghana, Uganda, Ethiopia, across Africa. We're very excited to have you here. And I did not forget South Africa, I was just looking at Am. Wonderful. We have quite a number of guests, you know, from the US as well in here. This is actually streamed live, so I'm sure that there are a number of the people across the world, you know, listening to this event, and we're very excited to have you here. Let me start by talking about Africa and the history of Microsoft within the continent, because I think it's important to set that background as to what Microsoft has done here within the continent of Africa. We've been here for the last two decades. Some of you may not know that, but we've been in this region, invested here over the last two decades, over 20 years, with a huge partner ecosystem of about 10,000 partners that we've worked with. You know, many of you are in the room, I've seen a number of partners in the room who have engaged with us, you know, within Microsoft over the last couple of years. And right now, the world is changing, it's all about digital transformation. We are building new types of partnerships, all forms of partnerships, all shapes of partnerships, you know, are happening. And part of what we want to talk to you about over the next 2 days is around, you know, how can we unlock the potential of Africa? How can we do things differently? How can we share? How can we collaborate? You know, and how can we really enable locally relevant solutions for Africa, because we have our own issues and we know how to deal with those issues. And that is the reason why we're here, to listen, to enable, and to share perspective. And I'm sure that there will be a lot of that going on in the next 2 days. One of the things that has happened, in 2011, we had what you call the Africa Business Forum, where we had a few guys from Africans in Microsoft basically trying to demystify Africa to our COP team, the guys in Seattle. And they shared their perspective about Africa, you know, what it means, you know, the fact that we're 1.1 billion people, we have a huge population, we're about 54 countries within the region and all. And just trying to give perspective about what Africa is all about. And that happened. Then in 2013, the head office decided to invest in Africa, and we started this thing called For Africa. And I'm sure a lot of you have heard about For Africa. It's quite evident in the market. You guys have seen how they've engaged, you know, to address three core challenges. The first thing is around skills, which is a concern. The second is around innovation, and the third is around access. And it's not just about access, it's about access to affordable technology, because the question is, how can we really help bring the cost of technology down? That's the real question. And we're driving that, you know, we're really driving that mission, you know, within Africa through the For Africa initiative. Then, you know, they did some investigatory work and went to Nigeria, I think in 2015. That was a good experience. It was a lot smaller event, but they got some perspective about Africa and, you know, realized that, you know, there is motion in this region and in this continent. And people started hearing. You know, we have a number of our CVPs in the room who are here, about four of them in the room today. You know, and you're going to be hearing from a few of them later on today and through the week. And we decided that, okay, there's the big bank, which is this event. Okay, a lot of investment has come into this in terms of resources. We have tons of engineers. Our research team, which is a big part of the Microsoft organization, most of the guys are in here with us in Africa. I'm sure a number of them are listening to this conversation. And we really want to share and collaborate and all of that. Our biggest mission is, as you know, empowering every individual and every organization on the planet to achieve more. And we want to make it real. We want to make it real in Africa. That's what we're trying to do. That's the plan. Yeah? And we've seen a lot of activities. We've seen the engagement with For Africa, and we're trying to double down on that investment. We want to make it local, and we want to make it relevant. And, you know, there's some key pointers. You know, everybody says Africa is rising. Africa is rising. It's a new frontier. You know, there are 2,000 different languages in Africa. Interestingly, we're doing some analysis, and I looked at some data from the UN and from the World Bank around, you know, it says about 54% of the GDP of Africa comes from four countries: Egypt, South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria. Those four countries. And which constitutes about 32% of the population and 65% of the internet users within Africa. So if you think about it for a second, the opportunity is huge. It's huge for us to define it. This is where you find double-digit growth. And this is where you find some real innovative solutions that is being exported. We've seen what happened with M-Pesa, and you're going to hear from M-Copper very soon. Okay? So we feel that this platform is an opportunity to really share, collaborate, and have a great conversation and share perspective. Now, the engineering team are really thinking about how can we engage here? How can we support more? How can we help? You know, and that's the dialogue. And if I talk to the ministers and I talk to the principal secretaries and all within IT or within Kenya, at least from where I operate, and I will say it's the same thing in Nigeria and all the other countries. Science, technology, engineering, maths is an important focus for us. We cannot continue to think about only, what's that thing called? Africa magic, entertainment. No, we need to go beyond that, you know, into sciences and, you know, technology and all of those things. And we have the assets as Microsoft and several other operators. So, as I said, we have a huge delegation. Very excited to be here. I've seen many friends, many captains of industry, going to be sharing over the next 2 days. So please listen. Listen very carefully to the great stuff that is coming through. Our CVP, Corporate Vice President, is going to talk about the whole digital transformation story from a macro level, because she has very different perspectives across the globe. She looks after the worldwide public sector and industries, which includes healthcare, education, public safety, everything. All the industries she looks after. And she's going to share with us because she's the keynote speaker. But before then, I would like to use this opportunity and the singular privilege to introduce someone who's very important to Kenya. I call him the grandfather of IT. I call him the grandfather of IT because he's built quite a lot here, and he's a very strong supporter of the technology companies within Kenya. You know, I'd like to introduce no other but Victor Chalu, who's the Principal Secretary, ICT and Innovation in Kenya. Thank you.
Kenya grandfather.
The grandfather of IT.
Good morning, everyone. Actually, my task here today is very simple, is to read a speech from our cabinet secretary. And this is the second time in my life I'm reading a speech. So you'll have to excuse me because I cannot read it verbatim. But before I do that, let me take this opportunity to convey our cabinet secretary's greetings, Mr. Joe Muchero. He happens to have been engaged in some other duties out of town, but he's with us because he's very excited about what is happening here today, just as we are in the ministry. That said, I want to extend a warm welcome to lots of the visitors who have seen in this room from different countries, from different regions, as well as most of my colleagues whom I've seen here from the industry, and some people who I've not seen for quite some time. As I walked in, the first thing which struck me is the energy in the room. And I was saying, I wish I had the time to spend the whole 2 days here, but I'll try my best to come in and out and see what is happening. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy the next 2 days. Ms. Toni Towner, Vice President, Worldwide Public Sector, Microsoft Corporation. Mr. Amma Kamal, General Manager, Africa Microsoft Corporation. Kunle, who called me a grandfather. Not yet. I'm on the way there, but not yet. Distinguished guests, colleagues, and fellow practitioners in this sector. It's a pleasure to this morning to be here during this Microsoft Next Tech Africa 2017 opening occasion. And we are proud as a country to be hosting this event here in Nairobi. And as well as welcoming you to sample some of the things which are happening in this country. I believe it's not all just IT, but there's a bit more which you can look out to. I'm informed there'll be over 1,000 delegates who have already registered to attend this event. And I believe there are many more online, just as some of us will be doing. And this is a good sign of the interest which people have shown to participate in meaningful discussions which affect how we use and deploy technology, as well as the role of innovation and new knowledge in this continent and beyond. On behalf of the government, I wish to applaud Microsoft for choosing to hold this event in Kenya. Our digital transformation journey relies heavily upon the capacity of our people and we fully embrace the power of technology in many facets of our lives. To fully engage the citizens and steer them towards embracing this opportunity, the government continues to value the partnership with the private sector. And actually, when we talk about the partnership with the private sector, we truly mean it and we walk the talk. I think the last 2 years, 3 years, we've had a lot of things done with the private sector, and I'll enumerate some of this. In order to achieve the awareness, reach, and reach the impact desired, NextTech Africa is therefore a great opportunity for government, academia, and captains of industry, entrepreneurs, and students to meet under one roof and engage in conversations that can only deepen the public-private partnership in this sector, as well as in education, science, research, and development, among many other critical sectors in our societies. We are fully committed towards a digital and knowledge-based economy in order to increase our competitiveness. Working with the private sector, we see this as a complementary relationship in which the public sector plays the enabler role for the private sector to be able to innovate and create opportunities. As a ministry, we remain committed to strengthening policy and governance structures to enable and support market-driven investments due to our firm belief that technologically-driven economy is the most suitable model, not only for Kenya, but for most parts of this world or countries of this world. Today, ICT entrepreneurship is embedded within our national ICT master plan and the ICT policy 2016, which actually I should call 2017 because we'll be launching it anytime during this quarter. Nevertheless, one of the most interesting things about our ICT entrepreneurship ecosystem started even way before we put structures in place. Long before we had policy frameworks or even guiding principles of how to get things done, open spaces like NILAB, iHub, and many others played an instrumental role, not just in fostering community and collaboration amongst innovators, academics, and designers, but also in catalyzing the growth of the Kenyan tech ecosystem. I think most people have tried to contextualize the same way we try to contextualize why we win marathons, but actually we've not been able to get it right. I think it's the spirit of the people. Even without structures, people have been able to get things done. And for us, that is really where success comes from. And I always say, if we have to come up with a policy, that policy should not introduce unnecessary blockage to what is already working. If it's working, let's leave it to work and see how we can enable it to work even better. The success and fruits are now evident today in the likes of PesaPay, Gearbox, JamboPay, Illuminium Greenhouse, Ikitabu, and many other startups and innovations which have come out of this country. Of course, we all talk about the M-based revolutions like M-Pesa, M-Kopo, and many others, but we do have many others which we can really look at. Allow me to take a moment to commend our entire developer community in Kenya, founders of what is touted as the Kenya Silicon Savannah. But when we look at it, I think they make us proud because they continue to really get things done, even when some of us are not very clear as to which direction to take. As I mentioned earlier, the government of Kenya's commitment towards digital transformation cuts across several verticals, and one of our key areas is to ensure that our youth, the future of our workforce, is equipped with the 21st century skills. From an educational perspective, the government has focused on successfully introducing digital literacy at the very, very early stage of our education system, and that is at the primary school. Currently, we are working towards realizing the delivery of computing devices into over 24,000 public schools. Just to elaborate on that, because many questions have been asked, why target primary schools? We have a 15-year perspective as to where we would want to be. And we decided not to do a piecemeal approach to the program. And the kids in class one are the kids we want to see in 15 years where they'll be. And the digital literacy program is not just about devices. It's complete with power to the schools. Right now we have power connected to over 20,000 schools in this country. I don't think that would have happened without this program. We have teachers being empowered through training. We have curriculum which is being developed, and soon it will be cloud-based so that you can access it from any position. And actually, the program is growing. We're working with the Ministry of Environment to start getting some of the tenets of management of the environment taught to the kids through these devices at a very early stage. And most recently, our colleagues in agriculture approached us to see what role they can play in this program at the early stage. So when we look at the digital literacy program, it's a comprehensive program which looks at every aspect of bringing up a technology-savvy society in a few years to come. In this program also, we've had partnerships. For example, let me mention that Microsoft, working together with our partners in education, have trained and certified over 12,000 teachers on teaching with technology, and I believe they'll be doing a second round of training in April this year. In addition, the government is working towards the establishment of an Institute of Technology and ICT incubation hubs at county level. The idea here is to take access to internet to within less than 200 to 500 meters from every citizen in this country. And we already have the first few rollouts of these centers taking place. We are committed towards being at the forefront of showcasing our ability to transform services through delivery, through ICT, and the establishment of the e-government service delivery centers, popularly known as the Huduma centers, and the e-citizen portal are just but a few of our accomplishments towards embracing digital transformation. In addition, we are working closely with partners and our five-pillar plan to design a modern government where we will collaboratively develop and implement shared services with emphasis on information security, as well as design roadmaps onto how to transform some of our critical sectors like health sector to be able to offer affordable and accessible health to all in an efficient manner. We draw from our milestones from the digital research program to continue with the effort of integrating ICT in teaching and learning, including the expansion of our showcase schools. We want to pursue scaling up of the successful Presidential Digital Talent Program, a program whereby we take on board graduates from different fields in science and take them through a whole year of training. Again, working very closely with the private sector, we put them through the private sector internship as well as the public sector. And I must say that the products that we've had from our first round of 100 students have been quite phenomenal. And everywhere they've gone in government, nobody wants to release them when the time to release them comes. We now have a new group of 400 of interns, and we are hoping to scale these up as we move forward. Ladies and gentlemen, as I conclude, let me state that Kenya is alive to the great potential we have as a country to make breakthrough discoveries through the use of ICT that will push our country to the next level in our economic trajectory. This can only be achieved if we continue to harness the partnership between government and the private sector to promote talents and ideas. It is therefore my hope that through various deliberations from this summit, we will indeed be more empowered as government, businesses, entrepreneurs, students, and custodians of this industry to explore all possible opportunities of collaboration towards the Kenya Digital Transformation Agenda. It's my pleasure, actually I should say it's the CSA's pleasure, to declare the next Tech Africa 2017 summit officially open. Thank you.
The real question that needs to be asked as well as answered is, what is it that we can do that is unique, that is impactful.
It began with the question and a desire to make a difference.
Can you hear me talking?
What we do impacts each and every one of us.
Technology has the power to unite us.
That is something to be celebrated.
When I lost my eyesight, I thought that my painting days were over.
But the vision has evolved, and our mission is clear. We are going to empower every individual and every organization to do more.
I built a computer and I opened a fridge with a Lego.
To achieve more.
We can study black rhinos without disturbing their natural environment, so we can help keep them safe.
Technology has changed Braylon's life by opening up the world for him.
It is a process of continuous renewal. It is about looking forward.
Whatever I can do to help compute a cure for cancer, that's what I'd like to do.
I can see him.
And asking the question, what can we do together? There is no limit to how far we can go.
If you dream big enough and believe in your dreams, you can make it happen.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Tony Towns Whitley, Corporate Vice President, Microsoft.
Thank you. Thank you. Why Microsoft? Why this mission? Why now? You know, it's interesting. I joined this company almost 2 years ago because of a new narrative that is Microsoft. You take an iconic brand, 42 years old. You take a new CEO with a very bold mission statement. An engineer by training, a closet economist from my perspective. And you bring a set of individuals together. And you start to allow that mission statement to permeate all that we do. Every asset in the company coming together, from engineering, to sales, to marketing, to corporate social responsibility, to research, many of the representatives you see in this room. This is the new Microsoft, and this is our new narrative. And it's a narrative that comes down to a mission statement that we hold ourselves accountable for on a daily basis. Some people say, hey, what's in a mission statement? I will tell you, this event is in a mission statement. The very fact that we're here is this new Microsoft. And this is about a transformation that is particularly relevant now as we launch into a fourth industrial revolution. This is the Microsoft that's addressing the connection between the digital and physical world as we go forward. So let me introduce myself. I'm Tony Towns Whitley. I run Worldwide Industries for Microsoft, where we have capability in 120 countries and serve other countries with our product sets. But I have the honor to work for a company that's focused on empowerment. So what does that look like? Well, we'll see if the actual clicker will move. And if not, I'll just do a bit of dance up here. Let's talk about what empowerment looks like. And let's talk about what this transformation looks like. You know, as we look here, we see the difference of 2005. Let's go back a few years. Pope Benedict, and the announcement of Pope Benedict's election in 2005. Now I want you to fast forward to 2013, and let's look at what that looks like. This is the 2013, a little bit different in St. Peter Square. You barely can see the Pope. What do you see? Everybody, we see what we see here. Cameras and lights and phones. This is what we're talking about, a technology that's changing at a breathtaking pace. Advances are being made in medicine, education, manufacturing, retail. Every industry that Microsoft is looking at and engaging in, there's a transformation occurring. And this is our opportunity as a company and in partnership in countries around the world like this fantastic country and this fantastic region for us to look at how that transformation is landing. Look, here's what we know. We know that in the midst of this transformation, it has changed the lives of millions of people. It's brought many out of poverty. It's created a middle class in some areas. And yet we know with transformation, not only is there opportunity, but there is challenge. I just recently attended the World Economic Forum in Davos. And it's interesting what the theme of that forum is this year. As you see, responsive and responsible leadership. Why that theme? Because we're aware, not only through political activity around the world, but we're aware that there are many that are concerned about being left out of this transformation. We are concerned about the divide that can occur and that may be occurring now as we digitally transform with these technologies. And so we look at regions like Africa that have an opportunity to leapfrog. And at the same time, we're absolutely aware when global leaders come together that their leadership has to be different going into this new transformation. How different does that leadership need to be? Well, here's our point of view at Microsoft. When we talk about digital transformation, there's an opportunity for everyone in this room to take on a different leadership mantra. We believe it is about transforming every industry. You heard some of the ones that my team has responsibility for, public safety and health and education and national security, government, civilian government transformation, manufacturing, retail, financial services, media, comms, pharmaceutical. But in the midst of transforming those industries, there's another couple of elements that have to come to play. We've got to equip leaders in this room, leaders in this country, leaders in this region, to make data-based decisions, data-driven decisions about how to address some of the most complex societal issues facing the planet. That's why this has become the new narrative around the world. We also have to ensure that the digital dividend is inclusive of all. And that's particularly important because we know some things. We know from the 2015 gender gap study from the World Bank that for every one digital job created for a man going forward over the next 10 years, 4 traditional jobs will be displaced. But for every one job for a woman, 20 jobs will be displaced. There's a 5x impact for women in the digital transformation. Why is that? Because they are more representative in labor categories that will be transformed. So you can see if we're not purposeful, if we're not mindful, and if we don't target certain groups, this digital transformation that we're all so excited about could actually exacerbate a digital divide. That's why leadership in the digital transformation is so important. And when Microsoft talks about digital transformation, we talk about it across really 4 journeys. We talk about it in terms of engaging citizens if you're in the government, engaging patients if you're in healthcare, engaging your customers if you're in the commercial sector. How do we engage differently with new technologies? We also talk about it, employee productivity, government workers, care groups in health, teachers. How do we empower the employees to work in more productive, efficient ways? We talk about it in terms of optimizing infrastructure. Government, where I've spent a lot of my career, has for years cobbled on legacy infrastructure, new investments and holding to the old, with very expensive maintenance. We've got to modernize the infrastructure. And then finally, we talk about a new model for products, services and service delivery, new business models, which I'm probably most excited about giving a few examples of because we have some today, not only that I'll talk to, but real life person examples. So look, one of those examples, and we're going to talk a couple of different industries and a couple of different ways that we approach digital transformation. Let me talk about the Swiss global banking group, Temenos. And Temenos was looking for a platform for their T24 application, which is a mobile banking application. But they needed a cloud platform that would allow them to expand their access and to increase the kinds of data that they were going to need to analyze over time. They needed something to support one of the best and strongest mobile applications that they had. So they looked to Microsoft, they looked to our Azure cloud to do that. And let's look real quickly for just a moment, if you will, with me, at what happened.
Right now, there are 2 billion people who don't have access to basic banking, but that is changing.
At Temenos, we use the Microsoft cloud to provide banking to the millions and millions of people who need it but don't have access to it. With the Microsoft cloud, we can enable a banker to travel to the most remote locations with nothing but a phone and a tablet.
More and more people are getting access to credit.
Everywhere where there's a phone, you have a bank.
So now a person is able to start a business and generate an income and employ somebody for the first time, and you can actually see the success.
It's transforming our world.
The Microsoft cloud helped us to bring banking to 10 million people in just 2 years. That's potentially 10 million new businesses.
Technology is about breaking down barriers, removing limitations, so that every person has access to opportunity.
A small amount of money could change people's lives. It's very, very powerful.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's the Temenos example. How many of you in the room are not working for a global multi-million dollar company? Who are not working for a global multi-million dollar company? Okay, that looks like about 80% of the room. Please don't send me your resumes. So let's talk about a different example. Let's talk about two students in Uganda that didn't have the backing of a global company, that basically decided that they wanted to address an issue. They wanted to address an issue of prenatal care and maternal health. And when the Ugandan government said that it was going to regulate that pregnant women would get at least 4 prenatal checkups, that was a fabulous policy that didn't have a realistic outcome because many of the rural women could not get to the clinics for those checkups. They didn't have access. They went to midwives. Some of those midwives were not well trained in to identify and detect prenatal health patterns. So this set of just Ugandan students, I think the gentleman's name was Joshua Okello, and just a couple of his friends got together and created, if you will, a mobile phone app and a fetal heart monitor that plugged into a phone and an app to measure the health of the child and the mother. Two students. We all know how much money students have. No money. I didn't have any money. Two students came up with this. And Wensenga is a project now that's affecting mothers and children, improving the lives in Uganda. So when we talk about innovation, we're not talking about it having to happen at a global maxima every time. We're talking about individuals with a dream that can make a difference. Let me give you one other example, because this individual is in the room. Andreas, come up and talk to us a little bit about Incopa, if you will.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak, but I'd like to... That's not the right one. Or is it? No, it's not like there, yeah? Or has it changed now? Okay, good. Maybe that is my one. I hope that's my one. So, this morning was black. So let me talk about a bigger problem, actually, that we have is how do we get power to get phones charged, to get light in the room? We have about 18 million households in East Africa that have even no access to the grid. Not that the grid is not working all the time, but they even have no access. So they use really expensive kerosene every day to just light up the house. It's very, very bad, kind of, the fumes of it. It's not really healthy. So we have, but what we see, we have actually a huge amount of mobile penetration here in Kenya. 93% actually of adults have a mobile phone. And one of the problems is actually nobody in rural Kenya or East Africa has actually can't afford important assets to change their life. So, but it's not only, a mobile is not only just for talking. So there was already the first mobile revolution here in Kenya. And we had this example of the bank, mobile banking. Actually, Kenya is one like of the countries that have mobile banking with M-Pesa since several years already. So 72% of Kenyans now are already using M-Pesa. So we have mobile banking. And that actually tells us something. Now we have a bit more data. Yeah, we talked about data. We know that most of the people can spend about $2 every day. But they still spend a quarter of that just to light up their house on kerosene. So now what we do is we link them up to the cloud. Most of our people, they don't even know that they're connected to the cloud via IoT. And we actually enable low-income Kenyans now to acquire a life-changing asset. How we do that? So we have the mobile money platform. They have no collateral. But now we offer them something that they haven't had before. They get three lights, very, very energy-efficient lights. They have a charging station for their mobile phones, and they have a radio. And that for less than they would spend on kerosene every day. And now we even upgrade their lives further. So if we know that a customer has a good payment behavior, and that is exactly the data that transforms life, yeah, then we know that we can actually offer them much, much more. We give them the opportunity to have a water tank, a TV, a smartphone, those life-changing assets. Now they have access to that, and still less than they have paid for the kerosene. So how we do that? So we take $35 of deposit that we have to do just to see that actually the customer is going to pay. It's a credit risk still a bit that we have to deal with. And then the customer pays now 50 cents every day. We have calculated a normal customer would normally spend 60 cents per day on kerosene, batteries, charging their phone, and everything like this, sometimes even more. All the payments are made digital, M-Pesa. That's the only way. There is no cash transaction. And all solar systems are monitored in real time through the cloud. And I come to this a bit later as well. But after a year, this customer owns a solar home system now. And then he has even the opportunity, because we have all the data about his credit history now, to get more assets, as I said already earlier. So good times with the family. Yeah, one of our examples. People can now sit at home in their Kenyan rural home and see actually the world through their TV. So how we do that? Data. Data is one of the most important things. 5 years ago, when M-Kopa was founded, nobody was actually thinking of IoT, big data. That was like somewhere, yeah, but not really a topic for maybe a conference like this. So we collect 30 million payment notifications every year. That's the amount of transactions that is going through our system. Every day, all our devices are checking into our platform, and we have 1 million plus device readings every day. That is from battery to temperature to agriculture sensors, everything. We have a geographic device mapping. We know exactly, well, not really exactly, but very precisely where our devices are. And we have 450,000 rooftop sunshine readings that we get in every day. So how do we enable that? So cloud is the enabler for that. I just want to give you a bit of detail, so just to give you a bit of the size. We have about 66 SQL Azure databases that we are using across all the different areas, from development, testing, into the production environments. We're using about 255 virtual machines in Microsoft Azure. I got this information yesterday a bit too late, so we have about 680 terabytes of data. Yeah? And then we use other software as a service tools like Dynamics 365. We are, I think, the second company in Africa using Dynamics 365 already. And Office 365 as a platform to enable us to bring up all this information together and make business decisions. You can see here, like Power BI. Yeah, that's one of the most important aspects for the business to drive our business is data, as I said earlier. But this is how we visualize it. And then you see our MCOPANET platform here with some battery reading information. So to make really, really good also customer decisions, what we want to like drive with the customer further. So impact of MCOPA, I think we have now like 450, more than 450,000 homes are now connected via MCOPA, and we are connecting about 500 every day in East Africa. That means 56 million hours of kerosene-free lighting already in the last 5 years. We have calculated about $338 million of saving for our MCOPA customers by using our technology. And we have already upgraded 120,000 lives with our new products and TV. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if there could be a better example of value. You heard the entire, almost the entire Microsoft portfolio with a customer who's driving value and improving lives. And my favorite picture in your deck, Andreas, is the family sitting at home and enjoying, not even aware that they're connected to a cloud, just enjoying and having value. And this is what our CEO talks about. It's about value that we bring with our technology, but it's also about values that we preserve in society. And if technology is disruptive to values, we have a challenge. It should enable values. That's why, as a strategy, Microsoft has aligned all of its solutions that it takes to market for each industry against the 17 Sustainable Development Goals that were approved by the United Nations last year. There are about 8 of these goals that we believe we can lead the market, but we can participate in all 17. This is about the new narrative of not just building cool things, but applying those cool things to solving society's issues. This is the alignment that we have going forward. In addition to that, you ask, why is Microsoft stepping into the policy discussion? Excuse me. We're stepping into policy because we need to equip leaders to deal with technology that has advanced far beyond the rule of law, far beyond regulation, far beyond government process and policy. So a few months ago, we launched a Cloud for Global Good. The Cloud for Global Good is a set of policy recommendations written for governments and those in public sector to understand the issues related to new technology. How do you set policies for cross-governmental, cross-boundary data, for privacy, for inclusion? How do we deal with accessibility? How do we deal with cloud technology and complex issues around artificial intelligence? That's what we launched. And that's why Microsoft is taking a stand on helping leaders equip themselves to go forward. One of the great examples of where policy and technology come together is in the work that you heard described by the minister earlier, of where we've worked with the digital literacy program here in Kenya. This is probably one of the most comprehensive programs, education programs, that we have in the world. We've addressed teachers, we've addressed literacy, certifications, and devices. You know, we've learned for a decade that throwing devices at schools will never get the educational outcome. We've got to be ecosystem friendly to all aspects. Here's where we've certified more than 7,000 teachers. I believe of the 1.2 million devices, we've already sent about 270,000, and we will complete that program. It is a fantastic effort that took policy change as well as technology coming together. There are so many other programs that Microsoft does to spur innovation. I know you're familiar with some of those. Imagine Cup and Youth Spark, geared at getting young people comfortable with digital literacy, comfortable with entrepreneurism,
comfortable with moving forward in the new digital economy. And one of my favorite, DigiGirls, which obviously focuses on keeping girls on the STEM path, interested, excited, engaged, and really, quite frankly, with a swagger that they can do STEM. And that's what we do through 4Africa, which you heard about earlier, one of the first major investments that Microsoft made in this area. You know, they've been asking me in The Economist when I was sitting on the panel with Bob from Safaricom yesterday, and every place I go around the world, they ask me, what's going to accelerate the pace in this region and other regions around the world? What will accelerate the pace? And I always give pretty much the same answer. There are three foundational engines that every country will need to accelerate going forward. Not just education, but learning, lifetime learning. Learning for those who might be displaced in the Middle Ages. Learning in every sector. And then not just innovation, but applied innovation. Innovation that solves societal issues. Entrepreneurism, these are the core engines. And then there's some levers around ICT. You can optimize with different levers, different technologies, different sets of technologies. And finally, you really need lifecycle partnerships like Microsoft and others to help create the demand in the global marketplace for what's produced here in Kenya and what's produced in Africa. You need partners that can help you have access to a global marketplace. That's what accelerates. But remember, I asked you the question, and 80% of you raised your hand to say you're not part of a global, large company. And I gave you the example of just two Ugandan developers, college students. Disruption is no longer confined to individual industries, countries, or regions. It can take a person, a single innovation, to change the way we think going forward. And with that, when I talk about innovation and change in a single person, there's no better person to bring up on the stage than Bambo Sefola.
Thank you very much.
Woo! I am crazy excited to be here and fortunate to follow Ms. Wheatley in the presentation. In September last year, I returned to Nigeria. I am from Nigeria. I returned to Nigeria. Woo! I returned to Nigeria not to teach, but to go there and learn. And it did not take long at all for me to realize that I had no idea what it meant for an individual that has an idea and wants to start a business and engage to take that idea and build a business. I had no idea what those experiences were. And my thoughts on what I could conceive it to be were completely wrong. My name is Bambo Sefola. I grew up in a town 100 kilometers from Lagos in Nigeria, a town called Ibadan. And my parents instilled in us one of the key values, which is the power and the strength in being able to listen. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more. Okay? Back in 2011, just like Kunle mentioned, in 2011, a small group of us, Africans at Microsoft, we had a dream, we had an idea. What we wanted to do was to take the engineering teams at Microsoft and shed a new light on the continent, Africa, on this emerging market itself. Bring the engineering teams to understand about business and about opportunities, and places where we could take technology and do more than we're doing today. That was the first Africa Business Forum, Demystifying Africa. And Kole mentioned that. Our first keynote speaker was Funke Okpeke. She's a CEO for MainOne Cable in Nigeria. And there were other entrepreneurs, medium-sized businesses that also came into Redmond. It was an event that was held on a Saturday, so this was during personal time for a lot of people. It was a packed house in Redmond, Washington, full of Microsoft employees coming to listen, and our executives as well, coming to listen to business leaders and entrepreneurs in this continent, coming to speak about the opportunity that is Africa and how you can still do business in Africa. The next year, we had the Next Business Forum, which was focused on your next billion consumers. Consumers are customers as well. And in that year, that's when we also launched Microsoft's For Africa initiative. And we also got another great message from the speakers that came to Redmond. They said, if you're really serious about expanding even more, you need to take this business forum, because it's a great thing, you're listening to us. Take this business forum and go do it in the continent and go do it in Africa. And so what did we do? We listened. We listened, and we had the first one in the continent. It was held in Lagos. We learned a lot from that. We talked to the businesses. They talked to us, actually. They told us about some of the challenges that they were having. They told us about key assets that they have purchased, be it ours or others. But in their own business, you need to bring them all together to deliver solutions for them. And we learned from that, and we took action in that. And we have, as an engineering team, created stronger bridges between the engineering team, the customers, the sales and marketing group, those who are sitting and engaging with the customer. That was 2015. And here we are in Kenya, in Nairobi, with a packed house. And we have evolved the business forum into what we call Next Tech Africa. The list of the desired outcomes are up there on the board. However, I want to take this opportunity to thank a few folks. Kunle, first of all, because I called him up. We're coming to your backyard. We're bringing the crew to your backyard. We had a conversation. He understood it. He knew what the opportunities were and how this could evolve and grow to be something even much more powerful. And with that, he got his team over here in Kenya to engage with us and partner with us. There's a team in Redmond that continued for the last year to get this program on the road. I'll call out two folks. Tammy, she's somewhere in here. You saw her in the video. And Dune. Both of them, plus a team of people behind them, have been working very hard for the last year to bring this event together. And give them a round of applause. Definitely worthwhile. All right. So now, we're building in Africa, right? We're building for Africa. But to do so, there are very important nuances that you need to understand. Now, you can try something and say, let's take a product that you've spent time in developed countries and take your whole business plan around how you deploy that product, how customers are going to use that product, and you can take that product and bring it in here to Africa and think you can plug it in and it's actually going to work. That does not work. It's a different approach. The other way you can do it is to bring yourself out from there, engage, grow from within, understand your customer, right? Learn what their challenges are. Look for what their unmet needs are. What drives them? What keeps them engaged? What are they trying to solve? Right? And then you can build a product that's customized for that region, for that economy, for that market that you're going to. And when you do plug it in there, it has a stronger chance, a better chance for it to actually succeed. And you will win. We mentioned, let me show you my, here's my badge, my Microsoft badge. And on there on the back, it's a message from our CEO. It's our mission statement. We've heard it 2-3 times here, but I have to read it again so that you can get it into your own blood. Empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. So you pick up your badge in the morning, you look at it, you read it, yeah? And then you continue on. But every person, that's very important. And how do you even begin to understand that? The first step in that direction is to actually get in there and what? Listen. Okay? That's the first thing you need to be able to go do. Now, I'm excited to be here with my with our team, the Windows Insiders Program, the Windows Insiders team. Last year, Donna Sarkar, Jeremiah Marble came to my office. Hey, Bambo, we have an idea. We want to embark on a new journey. What we want to do is to expand the story about the Windows Insiders Program. And what we want to figure out is what does it mean for someone who wants to do business in Africa, or do business, period. It wasn't just Africa. But someone who wants to take an idea and then go build a business around it. But what does it mean to be able to do that? Where do you think we should do this? An emerging market? Yes, let's do an emerging market. Well, which emerging market can we go to? How about Africa? Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Then the next question is, well, in that market, which country? Well, you're asking me, I'm from Nigeria, but it doesn't mean that's the country we need to go to, first of all. But there are other reasons why Nigeria was one of the spots for us to go pick. Why? You have one of every seven Africans lives in Nigeria. That's a big population if that's the case, right? 41% of Nigerians are involved in some kind of startup. Also, there's a huge percentage that are interested in entrepreneurship and engaged in it. And so to get something more focused, we said, let's go ahead and ask the Nigerians to submit ideas that will tackle problems that have plagued their communities for decades. There were 5,000 ideas that were presented. We took that time and selectively picked 25 ideas. 25 ideas, innovative ideas, 25 entrepreneurs as a result of that, that have a diverse set of ideas, a diverse set of entrepreneurs who have the opportunity to make an impact and change Nigeria, and in turn, change the world, impact the world in one way or another. That's the first Insiders for Good Nigeria Fellowship. Let's watch this.
Good morning. My name is Yinka Olariwaju. I am from Nigeria, and I'm a very proud African. It's a privilege to stand before you today, because today I will be sharing my personal story. As a young child, like many children in Africa, I had a dream, a very big dream. I wanted to be, or I still want to be, the president of my country. But as a nine-year-old boy, disaster struck. My biggest fan, my dad, was lost in a plane crash on his way back from Saudi Arabia. My mom at this time was about 33 years old, four kids, a widow, absolutely no income whatsoever. The best she could think about, Yinka and his siblings will have to hit the streets selling what we call pure water, which is basically sachet water, to earn a living so that you would take the proceeds of that and send us to school. But a member of the family stood and said, you know what, I'll give them an opportunity. So I had the privilege of attending the very prestigious Nigerian military school in Zaria. I went on to study in the University of Hertfordshire and the University of Aberdeen, where I finished with a distinction. This is my story, but really, this is the African story. There are many kids outside there who don't have the opportunity that I have. And this brings me to Africa. Africa right now is the largest recipient of financial aid, yet poverty remains a recurring decimal across board. The truth is, if financial aid could develop any continent, Africa will be the most developed continent in the world. In Africa, we consume what we don't produce and produce what we don't consume. As you can see, this economics cannot work. In Nigeria, about 70 million people earn less than a dollar a day. In Kenya, the literacy rate is about 70%, yet unemployment rate is about 40%. This is also the same in Nigeria, so much so that young graduates are turning to crime and kidnapping just to earn a living. But people are beginning to say, maybe this is the norm. Maybe this is Africa. This is going to be the tradition. This is the culture. I today say absolutely no. For me, I believe that Africa can be great. I believe Africa will be great. I believe that it is time that Africa's problems, we begin to build solutions to tackle the various challenges facing Africa. So after my sojourn in the United Kingdom, my benefactor called me up and said, Yinka, you have benefited from my generosity. It is time for you to return back to Nigeria and bring about a change. For this reason, I decided to return to the country and went to the prestigious Nigerian Law School. The law school takes about 10,000 students every year, but less than 40% of the students make it the first trial. And this percent goes down to 20% on your second trial. What this means to an average person trying to become a legal practitioner is that your hope is dashed from the very beginning. In the University of Lagos, last year, during the criminal law exam, about 80% of the students failed the exam. It is for this reason I got together and decided that I will start to teach students within my practice. We started to train them, and we noticed that they started to perform better. It is for this reason that I created the Law Academy, which is the first e-learning platform built specially for students studying law, and we help to make studying law simple and fun. We demystify the legal jargons so that everybody, even everyone in this room, can be called a learned colleague. So, what am I saying? What is the future? What can happen to Africa? That is why we're all gathered here. Today, with the help of Microsoft, being accepted in this fellowship, I am able to achieve my dream. I am able to make ideas, my idea, I am approved that an idea can go from just the ideation stage to the growth phase. Today, I throw a challenge to the entire room that going forward, when you see challenges around in Africa, let's think about the opportunities that lie there. How can we leverage technology and transform this entire continent that in the nearest future, Africa will be referred to as the best continent to live in? Thank you very much.
You can stay up there with me. So I know when he came on stage, well, Bamwo, you didn't introduce him. He is a strength in his own, right? This is one of the 25 entrepreneurs that took the time to submit an idea, okay? And we had this 25 that came together from different parts of the country. They became friends, they're on a mission, and they're delivering products, delivering experiences, building businesses together. It's just amazing to watch them actually grow. You have launched.
Yes, I have.
Yes?
Yes, I have.
He's launched his business already. And what happened with the network when people
Well,
signed up?
Well, on our first day, which was yesterday, our entire system crashed because we had too much demand.
Hey! So answer that.
So as we speak, the IT people who Microsoft helped to bring together to help my project are working tirelessly behind the scene, trying to just get the system back up. So I have a very big problem, and a good one at that.
And a good problem to have. Excellent. Now, we just opened the door, right? And we're kicking it even harder at this point, opening the door a lot wider. Today, in partnership with Growth Africa, I am proud to announce Insiders for Good East Africa Fellowship.
Woo!
That opens today. All right? And we're asking anyone with an idea coming in from Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, Uganda, to submit your idea. Submit to your idea, go up to the website, click in there, submit the idea. And what we're going to do is at the end of March, we'll go ahead and go through that and pick 25 innovative, creative ideas to form the next cohort. Microsoft supports them. We will support them with mentorship, technical mentorship. We'll give them business guidance as well. They will have software, and they'll be plugged into a global network. That is an amazing thing.
Absolutely.
We encourage you, all of you, to become a Windows Insider. You know who they are? The Windows Insiders. They're the million that represent the billions. So let's get started. Let's get in there, okay? Thank you and congratulations as well.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now, there are about 80 Microsoft employees who are here and representing different verticals in the company. Microsoft Research is here. The Windows and Devices Group is here. Cloud and Enterprise, we're here. The Azure team is here. All right? Office 365 guys are here as well. So now, in the first Africa Business Forum, the one that happened in Lagos, we had about 28 or so Microsoft employees and one VP that showed up. How many do we have now? I mean, we're coming, right? So it's great to see the interest is there. It's always been there, but then we're learning, we're listening more, right? And we're engaging with you. So we expected to have maybe about 500 people sign up for this event. We've got over 1,000 showing up. And over the course of the next 2 days, we expect approximately 500 people to be here and engaging and learning and talking and listening as well, right? You have a packed agenda over the next couple of days. I encourage you to participate. I encourage you to sign up and go to these events. I encourage you to meet with the Microsoft team and tell them your story, right? Challenge us and continue to challenge us. We're here to learn. And we're going to do something with that because we're going to build more things together, right? We're here to build for Africa. So you want to do one thing. Make sure you understand this. Make sure you learn from this experience, and then we come together with the strength, and let's go ahead and build for Africa. Enjoy the event. Thank you. Go, go.
Microsoft's mission is to empower every person, every organization, anywhere on the planet to achieve more. And Africa is the youngest billionaire.
What I like to say and what we always say is that Africa isn't rising, Africa has risen. It is the mobile first, cloud first continent.
We have a great opportunity for leapfrogging decades of technologies and closing the gap with the cutting edge technologies around the world. There are extraordinary Africans that are making things happen already.
They have a huge role to play here. They are going to be co-creators of solutions because they're the ones who are deeply invested in this amazing place.
The biggest thing we can expect from Nesta Africa is the spirit that fantastic things are going to come about in Africa.
My name is Nini, and I hope you have a life-changing experience at Nextech Africa.
My name is Duni, and I hope you have an inspiring time at Nextech Africa.
My name is Tammy, and I hope you have an innately African experience at Nextech Africa.
My name is Donna Sarkar,
Welcome to Next Tech Africa.